y'all enjoy having your balls licked last week by Frank. I gotta bust him some to open the show. I'm glad he came on for episode 300 last week. It was a lot of fun, a lot of good episode. But I was re-listening to it and editing it, and I felt like he really licked our taint, so to speak. I mean, that's how it kind of felt. Like he was so.
He's like,
I say he didn't. Yeah, do it
he
enough.
Wasn't quite enough for you, Long.
Yeah, could have been more.
No,
I really felt though listening back to it, I was like, man, Frank really was glad to be on the show. It really kissed our asses quite a bit.
It was like he got hit with that positively charged slime from Ghostbusters 2. You guys are the greatest. I love you guys.
The Long wanted
You're
more.
Great. You're the best.
Long wanted
more.
Long wanted to reach around with his lick.
Reach
around. Oh, man. But it was fun. It was good to have him on. And I'm glad he came on. And he's probably going to listen to this one and want to punch me for that opening there, but you know, it's okay.
Oh yeah.
He deserves it. God damn it.
You're going to get plugged.
And, you know, he did okay. I need to go back and listen how many times he said, you know, I think I just said it a couple times in the opening, but,
I don't know. I don't know if I noticed it that much, you know,
it's there, but, this is the Rebel Radio Podcast. This is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Long. And,
it is June, beginning of summer. Thank God the Johnny Depp trial is over. I was getting a little tired of hearing that. But the memes are glorious, and they'll live on for a long time. And I think that's we're all winners in this with the memes, you know.
And, mm-hmm.
They will show you a living infamy.
And I was thinking, like, man, I'm trying to think of the last kind of public trial that was this ridiculous. And it's just like, you know, it's funny how those things kind of occur. Wow. It just shows you the ridiculousness of Hollywood sometimes and the lengths that people go to try to prove a point. Now poor Amber Heard is broke. She better hope Aquaman 2 makes a lot of money and she gets a little profit from it. So darn, I don't feel bad for
real.
I never feel bad for filthy rich people. You know, it's like, it is what it is. I won't go off on
until they start screaming about taxes being raised, and then they'll make it sound like that we're getting our taxes raised.
I won't go off on a tangent about another rich person who was upset they had to wear a dress to a movie premiere 15 years ago. It's like, whatever. You know, you weren't upset whenever the movie was making you a ton of money, but sure. Ridiculous. But anyway, how are you guys? How you doing? You recovering from that massive 2-hour show last week and work and everything else? Long, you took a couple days off, so you should be pretty well rested.
Not really. Spent some of that time, so might recall Dad went into the hospital again. So spent the last few evenings just dealing with that. But Friday was actually a good blowout, you know, so it was a good event.
That's good.
You know, for me to park my brains for about an hour or so.
And then you delivered to a strip club today. Did you see anything interesting and strange while you were there? I have to ask.
Yeah. You may not believe me, but I've never been inside a strip club. I'm 43 years old. I've never been inside a strip club.
Now, this was a female strip club, not a male strip club, right?
Any kind of strip club.
That's okay. Oh, okay. I mean, there's no shame in that. I don't, you know, no big deal.
Hey, sometimes
the internet took care of that for me.
I can't say I never have been in one, but, you know, teach their own. So this was
it's one thing seeing it on TV, but when you actually see it in real life, you know, the first thing I thought was like, man, this could be someone's daughter or someone's mother, you know.
And I'll be honest, it's like when you see it on the movies and stuff, it's more that L.A. glamorous type deal, you know. It's not like that in Houston. Houston are dark, they're dungy, they're kind of ghetto. Now, I'm sure there's some nice ones in Houston, but where the sports stars go, but I've never been to the only one I've ever been into that was even close to what you see in the movies. There's one in San Antonio I went to after a corn show, and I was with Frank, who was on the show last week, another friend of ours, and we went to one, and it was very much like in the movies. It was happening. It was hot, and I walked out of there broke. So I have experienced a good one, but yeah, most of them in the city are that I've been in are not good. But long experience, something new today.
It made my wiener feel funny.
I bet it did. Oh. We did. You texted before the show you had to use the bathroom and take a shower. We know what you were really doing before the show. You had to get that out of your system.
Whatever. Low-hanging fruit. And that's moving on.
You did leave it out there hanging, man, so you know. So it's all fair. Yeah.
All I said is I took a shit and I showered.
No, the wiener funny remark. You left the joke hanging right there, man.
Oh, that one. Oh,
it's fair game. Yeah. Moving on. But yeah, I start vacation today, actually. So getting about 9 days off just to relax. Go out of town for a couple days, but it'll be mostly relaxing, I hope.
That's awesome.
I'm a little stressed about going out of town. My eyesight is not as good as it used to be as I wear these special contacts and stuff. So some long distance driving makes me a little nervous, but I'm sure I'll be fine. I'll take my time getting there and it's just something I haven't done in a couple of years. And old age problems as you get older, it's just things that I think about. So, but I'll be fine, I'm sure. So I don't know. I guess I haven't done any. I mean, the last couple of times I went out of town, that Frankie's getting brought up in this show. He kind of drove, like went to Lakey last year. He drove, and so I haven't really done a lot of long distance driving, but I'm sure I'll make it. And, it'll be all good. And Austin's not too far. I know where I'm going, so. Yeah. But anyway.
You know where you could go? I didn't realize that this was over there, and I missed my opportunity to visit it, but the house from the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre was made into a Victorian style, like breakfast, like and lunch place. And I think bed it's and called breakfast a, I think it's yeah. Bed, well, I don't know if it's, I don't think it's a bed and breakfast. They do have the upstairs kind of intact from the movie a little bit. They got a stuffed, a replica grandpa up there from the first one. But it's called Grand Central. I think it's called Grand Central Station, and it's definitely a breakfast and lunch place. You can stay in the train cars across the street, and there's a whole experience apparently that some people do, big fans of the movie. It's right there on the edge of Austin, and it still looks the same.
Well, I know. I mean, the problem is it's on the Bastrop side of Austin, and generally my sister lives on the Round Rock side, so I'm kind of probably going in through 290 instead of 71. So,
You might pass the gas station.
Oh, gas station to the Bastrop. Gas station to the Bastrop side station. Also.
Yeah, the gas station on the Bastrop side. Good barbecue too,
but that's okay. I can pass on that stuff. Trust me. There's a weird thing out there in the hill country in Bernie, Texas. I always wanted to kind of go if I'm ever in there. There's a movie buggy museum out there, and I've heard it's really cool. It's like all these different buggies that have been used in movies, and it's just this strange pop culture museum in Bernie, Texas that a lot of people don't even know is there. But apparently, the museum is pretty good. I guess there's buggies from various movies over the years, some different westerns and some modern stuff too. I think There Will Be Blood. I think there's a buggy from that movie there and some other things. So interesting. Little strange museum in the middle of Texas you wouldn't even know was there. A movie buggy museum.
Neat. So,
yeah.
Movie buggy.
But well, let's get into the show then. Download this where we tell people what we watched, streamed, or played this week. And I think I'll go first this week. I haven't gone first. I guess I've been on a little Tom Cruise kick this week for some reason. I went and saw Top Gun Maverick, and man, it is so good, guys. I'm telling you, I know you were a little bit on the fence about seeing Top Gun, but it's a fucking great movie. It really is. It goes above what you were expecting. It is solid entertainment, a sequel that goes way beyond the original. very much worth seeing on the big screen too, just from the fighter jet sequences alone. You know, they shot it all with, you know, real jets. There's very little CGI in the movie. And in Yoda. The work and passion they put into this movie, you can see it on the big screen. And Tom Cruise just continues to entertain. I highly recommend going to see it. It's really good. I'm not going to steer you wrong in this. I don't think you'd be disappointed. It's worth it.
Can't wait to rent it.
I'm telling you, man. I'm telling you, you want to see this with those jets roaring around you and surround sound.
I have
surround not sound. Movie theater surround sound, though. Trust me. It's worth it.
Yeah.
You can come see it at my place.
Still not the same as that movie theater experience. Yeah,
and I got a new big screen TV, so
oh, yeah. Rent it. I do want to go see it in theaters. I actually missed my chance to go see it in 4DX, which I'm kind of on the fence about 4DX. You know, I don't know if I want like...
Is it expensive?
Yeah, it's like a $25 ticket. And they apparently, like, if there's a, you know, if there's like clouds, they have like smoke that they have coming on the floor. If there's rain, you may get, you know, drizzled with water. And there's other stuff. It's like a, you know, an element. They add the elementalness of it into the theater. And I'm like, you know, does that take away from the movie? You know, but I have a buddy that's really, really big into it, and he was going to, you know, get me a ticket to check it out. But I missed
that. The only thing I've heard that's cool about it is because the way they shot it, there's some scenes where when the 4DX that you can see some extra jets on the screen because the way they shot it that you don't see on the normal version. But even that, you're not going to get – once you watch the movie at home after seeing it, you're not going to get the same experience. I'm like, I don't know. Is it worth it? I've always not been a big fan of gimmicky things. I've never was a big 3D guy. Like, I enjoyed a few 3D things I saw, like Avatar and stuff. But overall, I was like, if a movie can't stand on its own, then that's just me. I'm a traditionalist when it comes to that, you know. But definitely worth seeing, man. I highly recommend going to see it on the big screen if you can. And then I decided to watch to rewatch Spielberg's War of the Worlds this week with Tom Cruise. It had been a long time since I saw it, and you know, the movie's actually pretty good. I think the ending of it's kind of abrupt. It feels ends kind of abruptly, but it's so awkward.
And the kids were dumb.
The kids were a little, that's probably the worst part of it. And then Tom Cruise, he doesn't do well playing a character that's not confident, you know, and this movie he plays kind of a deadbeat dad, and he's not real confident. And it's just kind of like, it doesn't fit his persona. I think Cruise is better with characters that are confident in what they do. But I think Spielberg's War of the Worlds is pretty solid. I really like the way he shoots it, where it's all shot from like eye level and you're looking up at the aliens. I think that's pretty cool. So it kind of gives you experience like you're right there in it. I don't know. I just felt like watching it the other day. And other than that, Obi-Wan Episode 3, which I know we've probably all watched. We'll talk about that in a minute. We'll save Obi-Wan for a group chat here in a second. But anything you guys checked out this week?
No.
Long ain't watched shit like all year.
That's what happens when you're addicted to an MMO.
Hey man, it happens.
And then plus I have a niche taste in stuff that people don't even know what I'm talking about anyway, so why even bother?
Special hentai, but we won't talk about that.
Yeah.
With tentacles.
Yeah, starring Mark. Yeah, starring Mark's mom.
That's just really weird. But I mean, you know, whatever, man.
Oh man. I went ahead and watched the first half of Stranger Things. I really like it. I like how they did the story this year. And one thing you might, man, I may get, you know, laughed at, but I didn't realize that they're naming these monsters after Dungeons and Dragons creatures like this whole time. I just thought they came up with names. I didn't know it was like based off of the Dungeons and Dragons characters that they
really
face in the game. Yeah, I didn't know.
First season, they straight up named the Demigorgon after playing the game.
Yeah. I mean, I knew that they named it after playing the game, but I guess I didn't, you know, there's that little line that I just didn't, you know, didn't quite.
Not nerdy enough. It took about a minute.
Yep. So my wife's like, yeah, so who's Vecna in Dungeons and Dragons? And I'm like, I look it up and I'm like, well, it's this wizard, you know, and, you know, yeah. And she's like, well, that's what they name their monsters off of. And I'm like, what? Jackie had to tell me. I was like, oh, crap. I was like, how did I not know?
She's not like, just a good looking woman. She's smart, too.
She's smart, man. She knew her stuff. I'm like, had to tip my hat or something to her, and on that one. But I've enjoyed. I can't wait for the rest to drop July 1st. I also, you know, I wanted to watch a Jackie Chan movie, and the first movie I ever watched with Jackie was Shanghai Nights. It was our first movie together. And so I rented it.
Movie.
Yeah, solid. Very solid. I like the story. I like the martial arts, the choreography. There's a scene where Jackie Chan's basically beating up people while doing like a Singing in the Rain type of dance. And with an umbrella, and just, you know, kind of reminded me of how cool his choreography really is. And Jake got to see some of it, and he's like, who's that? And I said, that's Bruce Lee's best student right there. I was like, I don't know if he's ever seen a Jackie Chan film, now that I'm known. So he sat down and watched it.
Honestly, he was part of Bruce Lee's stunt team for a little bit.
Weird.
Yeah.
Why is the second one on Prime and the first one's not? That's so weird. Because I know something.
Well, no. The first one
is. Well, no, for rent, but it's not for free. It's weird. Well, which one's the first one? Shanghai Nights is the first one, right?
No, Shanghai Noon is the first
one. Yeah, it's weird. One of them's not on Prime.
Yeah. It stands alone, though. It's like you can watch one without the other. Because it really gives you a touch of the backstory. Like, I didn't know about Shanghai Noon at all. I saw, you know, whenever I was, Shanghai Nights came into theaters, I was a sophomore in high school.
I remember what I did this week.
Oh, there we go.
That's not a freaking MMO. On Saturday, I decided to finally play my copy of Metroid Dread on the Switch. And it's a fun game. It's a really fun game. I really enjoyed that style of adventuring. It's the Metroid style of exploration and stuff, where you can't access a map and you have to backtrack to it whenever you find a new weapon or ability. The graphics are great. It's a 2D Metroid game, too. It's not 3D like Metroid Prime.
Oh, nice.
But yeah, you play Samus, and she goes to investigate a planet, and the gimmick this time is she's being hunted by robots and stuff, and they're indestructible. And you have to spend part of the gameplay trying to avoid them or run away from them until you get stronger. And that's why they call it Metroid Dread, because when you're in the same room with those robots, you kind of have to be on your toes and not get captured, because, yeah, it's very hard to escape them once you do get captured. But yeah, I play Metroid Dread. That's a fun game.
At least you accomplished something, Long. Speaking of Jackie Chan, before we talk Obi-Wan, is I realize we've never done a movie with Jackie Chan, but we do have one coming up in July. So,
please don't let it be Rush Hour.
No, it is Rush. Well, never mind.
I'm joking.
I thought you wanted to do that.
The Bronx.
Yeah, but man, Rumble in the Bronx, you know, it was fun when I first saw it, but you watch it now, it's pretty rough. Like, Super Cop is better. Rumble in the Bronx is kind of rough to watch. It's like, ugh.
Drunken Master 2 is good. Legend of Drunken Master, what they call it in the States. That's one of the top tier Jackie Chan.
Well, I was also looking, as I was making our list for the next month and a half or so, I was also looking at stuff that's easily accessible, too, and streaming, you know, and just because it's convenient, you know, to have things available. And because it's getting harder and harder to find stuff that's not streaming. But every now and then we come across something and it's like, like Matt's fucking Three Amigos pick. Like, God dang, I gotta rent it. It's like, I'm gonna give you a hard time about that one for a long time, Matt. That's okay.
I know.
It wasn't the worst thing ever. But, yeah, so Obi-Wan, episode 3, Obi-Wan Kenobi, man. First off, I can't believe we're halfway through this series already. A lot of rumors going around that we might actually, it might end up being two seasons instead of a miniseries, but that's all another thing. So, man, this episode, and anybody's listening, you know, beware, we're going into spoiler territory. It's weird. It's like, I really like the episode a lot, but is it kind of weird for you guys that like me that grew up with Star Wars and we only had we had so much Darth Vader, you know, in A New Hope and the original trilogy. Then we got that little taste of him in Rogue One, that it's weird to see him doing more stuff. Cause for 40 years, we've only had the certain Darth Vader we've had. Now all of a sudden he's walking through a town and choking people and being really evil and violent. And it takes me out of it a little bit. Does that make sense? But at the same time, it's fucking cool.
Yeah. No,
it doesn't make sense.
He's standing around stormtroopers with flames.
No. If I have one
beef, I'm waiting for it. No.
If I have one beef for the show, it's the end, but we'll get to that in a minute. But Vader, you know, at the end of episode 2, he knows that Obi-Wan's alive, and so he decides to go out into the field himself trying to help find Obi-Wan Kenobi as Obi-Wan and Leia are trying to get home, basically. So they escape to this mining planet, which has a large Imperial presence on it, and they're trying to survive. And I really, really enjoy the Obi-Wan Leia dynamic. Some of the dialogue they have together is really great, and it's one thing the show's doing is giving me a very much more of an appreciation for the prequels, and especially for the character of Padme and the way that Obi-Wan describes her. And man, it just breaks your heart when Leia asks him, "Are you my real father?" And he says, "I know, but I wish I was." I mean, like, some pretty emotional stuff they're putting in this show. But I really like what they've done, because I think it was so unexpected. You know, they advertised this show like Obi-Wan and Luke, and all of a sudden you're getting this wonderful story about a young Leia, and the actress is just, she's perfect.
Good casting. Real good casting.
Really? I felt she kind of, I don't know.
Oh, here comes Long hating on the child. Come on now, Long.
Yeah, now push her down the stairs too, if I get the chance. She's good, man.
It's brutal.
No, I'm joking.
Brutal.
And
she's all right. Maybe because she might reminds you of Waverly or something.
I don't know. I think she pulls off the mannerisms though very well of a young Carrie Fisher. You can tell this girl did her homework. She's watched video and she's watched and her facial expressions, the way she walks, the way she does things, it definitely shows. Mm-hmm.
Too bad Carrie Fisher's not.
Yeah, I think she's doing a good job, and Ewan is of course great in the show. I mean, Ewan is so good. It's almost like, I mean, I'm not much of an awards guy, but he should seriously be considered for Emmys for this, because his acting is really great. You know, and as he's trying to save Leia, get off the planet, they end up in this town. And after he sees a vision of Anakin Skywalker in his Jedi robes out on the planet, because you can tell this now that Obi-Wan has found out that Anakin's still alive, it's really weighing on him quite a bit. And as he's trying to also stay focused and save Leia, and they end up in this small town and they're trying to escape to like a, almost like an underground railroad style, is an Imperial defector who helps Jedis and other people get to where they need. And right when Vader shows up to terrorize his town, threatening everybody he can to look for Obi-Wan. And then Obi-Wan decides to have Leia go her separate way. And he says that because he's going to try, I guess, to, that part of the story, I guess he's going to try to distract Vader. I'm not sure what Obi-Wan was thinking with this. So he wanders off into the town, and of course Vader's right on his trail, and we finally get they're face to face for the first time since the duel of Mustafar. And the lightsaber fight was pretty cool, but it felt like a little, I don't know, I was expecting to be a little more climactic than it was. Like, Obi-Wan kind of gets beat around like a bitch. I know he's turned off from the force and everything, but it's just like, did y'all feel like Anakin was holding back a little bit, like he didn't really want to kill him, but yet he did. You know, because it just felt like the way like he had Obi-Wan handled, Darth should have wiped the floor with him.
Yeah. No, like he wanted to slowly take him out.
No, I felt like he wanted I think it was just right, honestly. I think Vader wanted Obi-Wan to suffer the way he suffered, and he wanted to prolong it as much as possible. He wasn't one for the quick kill. I mean, the guy spent the last 10 years in the freaking back to tank thinking about the moment he got disfigured, and he's all scarred up, right? And the moment finally arrives for him to be like, oh, man, I'm going to drag this out as much as I can, you know, because the guy's full of hate now.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like it's not holding back. It's like he wants to freaking make Obi-Wan suffer for what he suffered through. So it makes sense.
That's fair enough. I think my only beef with with the episode was the end of it where Vader makes fire appear and he goes to drag Obi-Wan through the fire to make him suffer. And then the fire goes away and then the thing falls down and makes a real fire or explosion. And then this lifter droid just sort of lifts Obi-Wan out, walks him out of there, and Vader and his stormtroopers just stand there. And I'm like, they're just going to let this slow droid go? It was kind of weird. It's like, I didn't quite understand the story choice there to just like, oh, we had him where we wanted him, but we're going to let Obi-Wan escape. That was a little bizarre. And then, of course, it ends on a great cliffhanger as the Inquisitor Reva catches up with a young Leia at the end. And then it was the credits come on. I'm like, you're fucking kidding me. Really? It's like, oh, it's like, damn it. That was quite a cliffhanger.
No, I didn't expect that to happen. And plus, how did she find the tunnel? I'm like, it's like, oh, this sliding door. I guess maybe I got caught up in the battle with Obi-Wan. Maybe I didn't see it. See if you noticed.
Well, I think she was just intuitive, and she was able to figure out there was something not right there. You know, I mean, you know, it's always implied
that the girl catch a break.
Force users, right? But it's always been implied throughout the Star Wars saga, whether you're a dark side or a light side, that you're somewhat intuitive and can figure things out. You know, so we have seen that before.
Yeah.
You know, where Luke felt that, you know, Han and Leia were in danger. So Reva probably felt something wasn't right here. So I'm okay with that. You know, I thought that was fine. It was just more the Vader fire thing. I was like, really? You have all these stormtroopers? You're just going to let by Obi-Wan? I'll catch you again later after 10 years. It was a little bit like, okay. You know, and Vader just stood there staring, looking menacing. But it was cool as shit, though, seeing Darth Vader on screen again.
I like the sibling rivalry between the third brother and the sixth sister.
Yeah.
He's like, Vader says I could do this. And she's like, well, Vader says I can do this.
Yeah. They kind
of there's a couple memes out there where. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Man,
just that little.
Yeah. Thing. Overall, though, man, I'm really enjoying Obi-Wan quite a bit. It's a good show, man. It's just so cool seeing Ewan back. And now even Hayden, man, you know, as much as Hayden's acting was a little to be wanted more in the prequels, it's really cool just seeing him come back playing Darth Vader. And, it's neat, man. It's Star Wars, man. And it's just, it's epic.
This is where the fun begins.
Yeah. And I do feel like, I'm going to trust in Deborah Chow and the Storymakers to wrap this up in 3 episodes because it feels like they've opened up a lot here and we only have 3 episodes to go. So we'll see how they go with it. But it's good. It's real good. I'm really liking it. I like it more than I like Boba Fett so far. And I didn't hate on Boba Fett like a lot of people, but I'm really enjoying the Obi-Wan show. So
good, man.
Dork. Vader.
Yeah. It's cool, man. I never thought, you know, we'd have more Darth Vader on the screen. And now, you know, people can say what they want about the Disney films and things, choices Disney has made, but Disney has given us more adventures in this world that we love and love or hate the stuff. I'm grateful for that. Cause I never thought I'd see Darth Vader walking across the town, choking people and threatening people and his eyes glowing red, and I'm getting that. That's fucking awesome, you know. So I'm cool with it. So. All right, well,
I wonder if they'll have the guts to adapt a Darth Vader miniseries or something based on the comics. Yeah,
or just a new story. I mean, Hayden keeps talking up interviews. He really wants to do a Darth Vader miniseries or movie or something. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens in time. You know, it really.
Yeah, they say the suit is comfortable to wear. They put like an internal AC unit in there.
Yeah, and it just feels like now that with these TV series being done, that anything's possible in this universe. Before it's all said and done, we might get to see a lot of stories we never thought we'd see before. So I think that's cool. And I think it's neat because I often wondered, even as when the prequels came out, you know, 15, 20 years ago, I thought, like, so Obi-Wan just hangs out on Tatooine for 20 years, you know? So it's kind of cool to see what he was doing.
Yeah.
Seems like a very boring life. But so we're getting to see a little bit of his adventure he had on the Disney Plus. All right. Well, let's get into today's feature film then. I didn't even think about when I was watching World of Worlds the other day. We're also doing a Spielberg film this week, and that is The Lost World Jurassic Park, and a movie that Spielberg almost did not direct. Joe Johnson came real close to directing it, but he was too busy. And then Spielberg, well, let's just be honest, money talks, and they threw some money at Spielberg and said, come back, do the sequel, and he's like, okay. As long as Spielberg fought for some scenes in this movie that he wanted. That was one of his agreements to doing the film. So Spielberg did come back and do the sequel. And essentially, this book is nothing like the Michael Crichton book sequel. It's pretty different. Where the first Jurassic Park movie, it's pretty similar things in the book, but the sequel is very different than what the book was about. Essentially, there's a Site B where they were doing testing the dinosaurs. And there's no restrictions to it. So John Hammond, who can't give up on his dream, wants to send a team in to see if the dinosaurs are thriving so that they can maybe send people in to capture some dinosaurs and try another Jurassic Park. And Ian Malcolm, played by Jeff Goldblum, basically tells him, like, it's a bad fucking idea, chaos theory and all that good stuff. But, of course, Hammond's really rich, and he's not going to listen. And he sends Ian and a few others in to see what's going on. And the dinosaurs are thriving. They're alive. And then InGen sends their people in too. And chaos ensues and people get eaten like any great dinosaur movie. And somehow InGen, though, gets off the island with the T-Rex. And the T-Rex wreaks havoc on San Diego, which was one of Spielberg's scenes that he wanted in this movie. From what I was a little confused, I guess they kind of already had a script or a kind of a story idea for Jurassic Park 3 before this film was made. And the San Diego scene was going to be in Jurassic Park 3. And Spielberg was like, no, I want that in my movie, because Spielberg always wanted to film a Godzilla style scene like that. So the whole San Diego scene is very much Spielberg's idea as his mini Godzilla movie and doing some stuff like that. And it's a little, it's not bad, but it's a little, it just feels a little like rushed. I guess towards the end of the movie, it's like, oh, we're on the island. Now we're in San Diego and the T-Rex is drinking out of a swimming pool. But you know, this movie though, it's not as good as the original, but it's still pretty damn entertaining. We have an unknown Vince Vaughn appearing in this movie, as Spielberg saw him in Swingers and wanted to cast him. And he was pretty much unknown at the point. We have Julianne Moore talking through her teeth the entire film. Did y'all notice that? Like, she never opens her mouth when she talks.
Well, she did the movie to pay off. Yeah,
she owed some money for a divorce. And there's Jeff Goldblum doing Jeff Goldblum things. And then there's the great Pete Postlethwaite, who always played great characters. And he's like the bad hunter who wants to hunt a T-Rex. And there's like a lot of little subplots going on in this film, kind of all over the place. But it's a fun it's a fun movie. I remember seeing this in theaters. And I at the time, I didn't think nothing like that it wasn't as good as the first one. This is kind of where the series starts going off the rails a little bit. It gets a little ridiculous, a little bit crazy. But it's still a Spielberg film, and it feels like a Spielberg film. And there's still a lot to like in this movie. When did you guys first see this?
Theaters.
Yeah, I saw it in the theaters. And I didn't think it was bad at all. I liked it just as much as the first movie, in for different reasons. Disappointed that Alan Grant and Ellie was not in it. But that's really not that bad. And no, I really like the team that goes onto the island with Malcolm, Ian Malcolm. Mm-hmm. And I love all the island scenes with all the mercenaries. That was pretty entertaining. And it's kind of terrifying too, especially when they're running through the field of tall grass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you see the whole mob creating a big, you know, pathway. And then you see the little grass being stamped down around them. That's the raptors hunting them. Mm-hmm. I love that, the visual of that scene.
Oh, yeah. And in the entire Jurassic Park saga, it's one of the coolest scenes.
Yeah. I also really like the double T-Rex scene mm-hmm. as well. When they're going in, trying to find their baby. Yeah.
That's a good, well shot.
Really good scene as well. Scene
too.
Very suspenseful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I overall like the film.
Yeah. The graphics and the animation, probably better than the original. They went with CGI with the wide shots, and then once they had close-ups, they switched to animatronics, which was I felt was smart. So you get closer, you have something that's more detailed and looks a whole lot better. The hardest part was doing the dinosaur hunting scene during the day, because you could see everything. But I felt like it's a really good scene. I mean, you have it shows the motorcycle going underneath this is the Allosaurus, right? And going in between the legs and the Stegosaurus. You know, it's cool seeing they had like four new dinosaurs that they added. Stegosaurus was from a bunch of kids emailing the studio or writing letters to the studio saying, hey, you know, we'd like to see a Stegosaurus, and you know, a little Stegosaurus in there. And then the what were they called? Friar Tuck, called the Friar Tuck with the head bone crusher. Yeah. Yeah, that was cool. I like that scene. It's just you know, InGen going to work.
Hmm. There were some things that even there was supposed to be a big scene with the flying dinosaurs in this one towards the end of the film, but they ended up saving that for part three, and then. There's a whole scene they actually shot, but they edited out of the film because the film, you know, you got to think this is 1997, you know, about 2 hours was your max film. You know, it's not like now where we can go to theaters or 2.5-3 hours. So there was a whole scene, like it never explained like how the crew got killed on the boat. But there was a scene they shot where a couple of raptors had stuck onto the boat and they ended up taking out everybody, but they ended up leaving that on the cutting room floor, and they figure audiences would just assume that somehow that the T-Rex killed them all, even though he's in the cargo hold. And even when I saw this as I was younger, that always bothered me. I'm like, how did the crew mysteriously die? You know, it was kind of weird. Yeah. It's they? Like, they're just, where they go, you know? But again, it was for time constraints. And amazingly, this movie was, Spielberg actually brought this movie in under budget. Which is amazing, and it was very successful at the box office. Not quite as successful domestically as the first one was, but worldwide this was a pretty huge hit because you know, and that's one thing, the Jurassic films, they've always done well at the box office, but they also play well worldwide because dinosaurs are for everybody, you know, and that's the thing. Even if you're cutting scenes that don't make sense,
shame.
Huh?
Which is
why
a
is
shame.
It a shame?
That it didn't do
as well. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, overall, I think worldwide it did well. It just didn't do as well domestically.
Yeah.
If I remember right. I mean, the Jurassic Park saga in general has been very successful at the box office throughout the years, and that's why they keep making them. Like, you know, they're advertising this new one as the final episode of the saga. I mean, let's be real. If the thing goes out there and makes $1 billion worldwide, they're going to make another one in a few years. I mean, yeah, it's just, exactly. It's just the way it works. You know?
So U.S. and Canada is $229 million, and gross worldwide for this thing is $618 million.
Yeah, so it did pretty well.
Pretty darn successful. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I agree with you, Mark. If they find a way to make $1 billion with this thing or get close to it.
In both the Jurassic World movies, even though Fallen Kingdom wasn't as good, both of them have made $1 billion at the box office worldwide. So the second trilogy, I guess you could call it the Jurassic World trilogy, has been highly successful as well. So, you know, there's no reason to think that we won't get more of them. In fact, you might even say the Jurassic World trilogy has been more successful because due to inflation and stuff, they made a lot more money. But I'm with Long. I really like the dual T-Rexes in this. I thought that was cool. I'm like, that's my first thought. Well, if you're going to do a sequel, go bigger and better with the two T-Rexes. And I thought it was cool how they're trying to protect their baby. You know, that was neat. This is where they're trying to hang on the trailer and the T-Rexes are trying to knock the trailer off and they're all hanging by the rope. And, you know, it's a little far-fetched, you know, but it's a dinosaur movie. The whole thing's far-fetched. Then poor Eddie, who's trying to save them all, and he gets chopped in half. It's like, I kind of felt bad for him.
Yeah, I really like that character.
And then all of a sudden, he's trying to save the day. And there's some, there's a lot of, I don't know, what would you call them, cliches in this movie where Eddie falls down a couple of times. And a lot of conveniences happen to tell the story. But, you know, that's okay. This is kind of how movies were made in the 80s and 90s. You would get a lot of story traps that were just convenient for the characters and for things to happen to make it more suspenseful, more exciting, you know, with Eddie falling over and not able to get the thing latched around the tree. And it ultimately led to his being a dinosaur food. And it's a shame. And then I still think the whole kid thing is kind of strange with Ian Malcolm. It's almost like we need a kid in this film, so let's give him a daughter. And it doesn't really serve the story all that much. It's kind of just there to give Ian a little more to do. You know, and that's just being real. I mean, you know, just she's just sort of there to have a kid in the film. It's weird seeing Vince Vaughn in like kind of a more serious role because over the years after you watch this, you kind of got to know him as more like, you know, he's more of a comedian type. He has done some serious roles, but he's just known more for playing funny stuff.
Wes Mantooth. Now this is Universal's 16th biggest film, or as far as like your global box office. It beats out Mamma Mia and 50 Shades of Grey, but loses to Fast 5, Sing, and Fast 9. But the original Jurassic Park is the sixth highest grossing film in their franchise. And of course, Jurassic World is their number one highest grossing film. So it wouldn't be too far of a shot to say this is probably their most successful franchise, Universal. And, you know, I think, you know, if you were to watch a Universal franchise, Jurassic Park would be one of them, especially if you grew up in the 90s like me.
Yeah.
I know whenever they re-released Jurassic Park in 2020, whenever films weren't coming out, they were showing like re-releases of, you know, of iconic films. I took Jake to go see this because I was like, this is one of those films you have to see. You have to see on the big screen. And I was like, yeah, the first one. It was cool seeing it again, especially with the, that T-Rex scream, man, just real iconic. And then the Raptors, the way they do the Raptor sounds. I mean, the way they came up with these dinosaur sounds.
They used a camel for the baby T-Rex. Yeah.
Wow.
And then, did you know that Eli Roth has a cameo in this film? Yeah, he's on the bus at the beginning, sitting next to Ian. He used to, when Eli Roth was going to film school and trying to become a director, he got to know a couple of casting directors that would put him in. Apparently, there's several 90s films where Eli Roth is an extra. And has little cameos because he got to know someone who put him in a lot of films. This is something I learned this week watching his film. I didn't know that. But apparently there's a few films out there that have Eli Roth cameos in the 90s. And this was one of them. The animatronic T-Rexes weighed 19,000 pounds each. So they had to leave them on the sound stages. They couldn't be transferred to where filming locations were. So a lot of those scenes were shot on sound stages with these giant animatronics. That's pretty
cool. Yeah, that just makes me miss Stan
Winston more. Stan Winston did all the effects.
You know? Yeah. And I think they've made them a little bit stronger to withstand the rain. Because in the first Jurassic Park movie, they had a problem with the giant animatronics not working because of the weight of the heavy making the models, right. Not the models, but the robots heavier due to the weight.
Yeah. And they shot a lot of this, in the Redwood Forest, not as much, I think the first Jurassic Park Live was shot actually on location in Hawaii, if I remember right. This one, to save on budget, they shot a lot of it in California, that area. Well, the first one I'm looking at, first one was shot mostly, yeah, it was shot in Hawaii and then some in California. So I was saved on budget there, not taking a whole crew to Hawaii for this one. So they subbed in the Redwood Forest as being islands, I guess, or off the coast of Costa Rica, which is funny because there's no large trees in Costa Rica, apparently, like redwoods anyways. But, you know, only most people wouldn't notice that, I guess. They actually grew the grass for the Velociraptor scene. They knew that scene was going to be in the movie, so they started growing it a year before the film to make it as tall as it was. I think that's kind of cool. And that is a very scary, frightening scene. I felt like this one, too, does go for some of the scares more. Like when they kill, what's his name, from Constantine, and all the blood's coming out of the water. And then when they go through the waterfall and the hippie guy gets eaten and his blood comes out in the water. And I'm like, that's a little bloodier in the first Jurassic Park. They went for more blood scares in this one. The Godzilla gag in the film where the Japanese businessman, he actually shouts, "I moved from Tokyo to get away from all of this." And originally that was going to be subtitled, but they felt that it was maybe a little distasteful, so they left the subtitle off the film. But you could still hear the guy shouting it. So, yeah, I guess that could have been considered. But I think people would have laughed at that, you know, because they would have gotten it back then. I don't know. Yeah. What do you think? You think it would have been distasteful? Yeah, no. I think it would have been
funny. At that time, I laughed, too.
I did, too. I remember seeing this.
It was a very, very brief shot, you know. But it's kind of funny. At that time, I was working for Blockbuster Video. And when that crashed, when the store got wrecked, you know, my coworker was with me. We both started laughing. It's like, yes, destroy that video place, yep. You know, so...
That was a funny scene with the Blockbuster Video. But yeah, overall, though, I think this is a highly entertaining Jurassic Park movie. Yeah, it's been a while since I've watched 3. I know people say 3 is the worst one. But I don't know. I remember kind of liking 3, too. Really, this whole series I've actually enjoyed. And I'm kind of looking forward to seeing Dominion. I'm going to try to go see it maybe next weekend when I get back from out of town. Because I've enjoyed this series, and it all started back in 93 with the original, and this was the sequel. And you know, Spielberg even almost came back for part 3, but at that point he decided not to. And of course, Joe Johnson went on to direct part 3. But I think this is still a pretty solid, entertaining Jurassic Park film. It's got some good dinosaur sequences, some good T-Rex stuff in it. And I think I give it a solid, I think I give it a B+.
I give it an A.
I'm more of a B+.
Yeah. It's entertaining, but I don't know if I can quite go into the A's with this one because it is a little all over the place at times in the story. Yeah.
That's too damn bad. I give it an A.
Man, you know what?
Too damn bad.
I kill you, Long. I kill you. All right. Well, as people who listen to the show know, after almost terrorizing each other over Duel of the Nerds, we retired it as a sub feature. So, we're going to do some new stuff with sub features. Kind of maybe a rotating sub feature from week to week as we go. We're going to kind of play this by ear, but we want to bring y'all some extra stuff. And we did a thing when we had our Patreon for a year, we did a thing where we did, this month in pop culture history on each monthly Patreon. So we are going to bring that to the regular show at the beginning of each month. It'll be our sub feature for the beginning of each month, as we will look back as what's going on in pop culture history for the month of June and give our thoughts on a little bit. And thanks to Matt. He always did a good job on the Patreon doing the research for this. So I gave him the job of continuing that. So Matt, give me along what you got for this month in pop culture history for the month of June.
Yeah, man, I got some good stuff for you. So this month in pop culture history, in 1988, the movie Big with Tom Hanks premiered, directed by Penny Marshall. And it inspired a lot of themes in Shazam, as we know. And I feel like it's a good film by Tom Hanks. Definitely one that we may do on the show one day.
It's been a while since I've seen that movie, but I remember being enjoyable. I know it spawned a lot of clones, a lot of movies that came out with similar kind of stories, I remember at the time, because it was a pretty successful film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This month in film history, 1989, Dead Poets Society premieres, starring Robin Williams, and the saying, "My Captain, My Captain."
I don't know if I've ever seen that movie.
It was a Robin Williams thing, so I was like, I like Robin Williams. I was like, I'll include that in there.
Well, I don't dislike Robin Williams either, but I don't think that's one of his movies I ever really bothered to watch.
I thought this was pretty funny. You might enjoy this, Mark. In 1996, Woody Harrelson was arrested in Lee County, Kentucky, after he planted 4 hemp seeds to challenge a state law which didn't distinguish between industrial hemp and marijuana.
My man.
So he was trying to prove a point, and he got arrested.
My man. Woody, man, I love Woody. And I'm so grateful he's revived.
Cool guy.
He's revived this career. I mean, I was thinking about the other day. Man, this guy in the last few years has shown up in Star Wars, the Venom movies, the Planet of the Apes movies. There's something else he's going to be in. Another
Hunger franchise. Games.
Yeah, the Hunger Games.
I like him in Hunger Games.
He revived his career by appearing in all these major franchises, and God bless Woody Harrelson.
Yeah, man. Let me go back a little bit further. 1968, James Stewart retired from the U.S. Air Force after 27 years of service. Of course, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He was a World War II bomber. And so, great actor.
One of my, we haven't really done a James Stewart movie, I don't believe, but I don't know if, he's one of my favorite actors ever grace the screen. I like watching Jimmy Stewart movies. There's a great Western, Broken Arrow, he did. Of course, everyone remembers him from It's a Wonderful Life and Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. He did a couple of Hitchcock films. The original Fly of the Phoenix is such a good movie with him in it. He's just one of the greats. Truly great actor.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you mentioned his World War II service, Matt, because if you notice that a lot of those films before his World War II service, it's all kind of bright and cheerful. Mm-hmm. But his post-World War II films have a darker edge to all of his characters after that.
That's a good call out.
Yeah, I mean, he started doing Hitchcock films and a lot of his characters have a slightly darker edge to them, but not as idealistic as his pre-World War II, because like Mr. Smith was, pre-WW2 and It's a Wonderful Life as well, I believe.
Man, interesting. I hadn't noticed that until now.
He was 2004? Also very... Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
I was just saying, very unassuming. Jimmy Stewart didn't like being famous. He tried to treat everybody like a regular next door neighbor. He just felt it was a job.
Mr. Rogers.
He felt it was a job to take care of his family. He never believed he was famous. He always just tried to treat everybody like a normal person.
He's a good man, definitely.
Yep.
2004. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Mark, I know that's one of your favorite Harry Potter films. Released into cinemas in the UK. And yeah, I think a lot of people think it's the best of the franchise. I enjoyed it. Mark, I know it's
one of your that favorites. Movie. I'm not a huge Harry Potter fan, but that movie is very good. That's a solid film. I did like that one a lot.
I have never watched a Harry Potter film more than once. More than all of the Harry Potters I've seen is one and done.
Nice.
I've never had the desire to rewatch them.
Mark, I know you'd like maybe this because one.
They're mostly mystery films.
Oh yeah, there are a lot of especially in that one. That's a big mystery. Whenever that happens,
freaking Fantastic Beasts was weird to watch. I didn't like it. I was like,
really, I don't really care for it either. So I didn't even bother with it. I didn't even bother with the sequels. I was like, yeah, I'm done with it.
Couple more things for you. At just a few years ago, 2019, this month, Twilight star Robert Pattinson announced as the new Batman. Mark, I know you would appreciate including that in there.
Yep, and damn good job he did.
And lastly, 1983, Octopussy, the 13th James Bond film starring Roger Moore, Maude Adams, and Louis Jordan premieres in London. I know Sir Roger Moore is your favorite James Bond, and he went on to inspire Austin Powers, so... You know, and sad that he's no longer with us anymore. Definitely enjoyed his films and his take on Bond, the ladies' man Bond for sure. yeah, he was the charmer and the definitely the campy James Bond.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that movie also came out the same time as Never Say Never Again.
Never Say Never Again, kind of going head to head. Yeah.
And Octopussy ended up making more money at the box office than the Sean Connery revival. Yeah.
Yep. It's cool how that happened, because it's like the person who directed Never Say Never Again had the rights to Thunderball. And so it was like they did a rehash of Thunderball with Connery. I thought that was pretty cool. I think I like Thunderball better, though.
It is... the 60th anniversary of James Bond this year. We most likely by the end of the year, we'll have done a couple of Bond films. I think we usually do about one a year, but I think we'll try to do at least a couple by the end of the year since it's the 60th anniversary. And I have one thing to add, and I don't want to take away your thunder, because if we continue this sub feature into next year, you want to save some stuff for June next year too. But I just want to mention this in June of 1989, of course, the Batman premiered with Jack Nicholson and Michael Keaton. I only say that because you guys realize that at this point, we were about 2 weeks away from a Flash movie with Michael Keaton appearing as Batman. And that was just a few months ago until they pushed it back to next year. But we're sitting here right here on June 3rd. We were 20 days away from a new Batman, of seeing Michael Keaton and Batman again until they decided to push the Flash back. So we would have been seeing him appear this month, but now we got to wait. Was it February or March? It's coming out, so kind of a bummer, but we're going to get it eventually. You know, I think Warner Brothers, it seems, this is a good segue into the news. I think Warner Brothers is trying to figure out how to lighten this Ezra Miller fire. It seems they've done some early screenings of The Flash, and it's being very well received. People are really liking the movie. So I'm kind of getting a vibe that they're going to kind of try to sell this Flash movie as almost a look here. We got Michael Keaton and Ben Affleck. You know what I mean? Because I think Warner Brothers knows they have a good movie on their hands, but they're trying to put out the Ezra Miller fires and see where they can go with it. So hopefully it's a good product. And hopefully, surely at this point, they have sat Ezra down in a room and said, look, you need to sit down, shut your mouth, and do nothing for the next 10 months so we can promote this movie. And hopefully it'll cool things down. Because
be a recluse.
Well, because I think what he did was bad, but it's not the worst thing. You know, he's not, yeah, he got in a couple of fights, but he's not out there. You know, he's not, you know, molesting children or doing anything terribly bad. You know, a couple of drunken fights. So I think Warner Brothers can brush it aside and still sell the movie, you know?
I saw the body cam video from one of those arrests.
Yeah,
and he's the cops like trying to, you know, put him in handcuffs, and he, you know, his hands towards the front of him, So he goes to grab his hand. He's like, oh, you touched my penis. That's my penis. And he's like, I didn't touch your penis.
Yeah, anymore. I saw something.
He's like, you touched my penis.
Who knows? Hopefully they can put out that fire and we get a good movie. Well, let's do a little news, man. There's a lot of Star Wars news here because it was all stuff that came out Sunday, Saturday and Sunday after we recorded at Star Wars Celebration. They announced another Lego Star Wars special called Summer Vacation. It's going to be on Disney Plus in August. Those are always fun to watch.
Have you seen all of them?
Most of them. They're pretty good. You know, the kids usually watch them.
Which one do you like? I like the holiday special.
That was fun. You know, that was a fun one. But yeah, the Lego specials are pretty fun. You know, they do a good job with them. They showed the trailer for the Bad Batch season 2. I fell behind on the Bad Batch. I liked it, but not as much as I liked some of the other stuff. Maybe I'll try to get caught up eventually. But there is going to be a second season. And the one show they announced, I'm excited. But this had been rumored for a few months, but they came to be true at Celebration. And it's going to be an animated anthology-style series called Tales of the Jedi. And I think it's coming as early as this fall. And then Dave Filoni's overseeing it. It's going to be short stories where you know we're going to get a look at Ahsoka's parents, apparently, and some other stories like that. And I think that sounds really, really cool. I think that's a neat idea in the Star Wars universe.
Liam Neeson's coming back.
Yeah. So that's some neat stuff. Then they also announced a second season of the Star Wars Visions anime show. So that's pretty cool. If you did not go see Doctor Strange in theaters, you only have to wait a couple more weeks. It's going to be on Disney Plus on June 22nd. So you can watch Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness once again in just a few weeks. And this, I was super excited about this. It kind of came out of nowhere this week, but Paramount Plus, you know, they announced during COVID that Mike Judge was working on a new Beavis and Butthead movie. And other than that, we didn't hear much about it. Well, bam, guess what? Here's a trailer, a title, and it's going to be on Paramount Plus on June 23rd, which is just a few weeks away. And it's called Beavis and Butthead Do the Universe. And I thoroughly enjoyed the trailer, and I laughed a few times at the trailer. And I know you guys always say I don't like humor, but God damn it, I love Beavis and Butthead. And I think the movie looks like a hell of a lot of fun. Tell me one of y'all watched the trailer.
I didn't get to see it. I know about it, but I have your message.
You watched the trailer, Matt?
I did not.
You are slack.
I meant to. Yeah.
It goes against his values.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yep. It looks great. I can't wait to see it. So I'm excited. So, and that's all the news I've got this week. So let's preview next week's film. As this was in our docket before we found out that that Fred Ward passed away a few weeks ago, and this is a fun little '90s sci-fi film that it's probably trying to set the record for most direct-to-video sequels ever made. I think there's about 8 or 9 of them now. I don't know. I lost track, but nothing beats the original, and it was starring Kevin Bacon, and that is Tremors.
Perfection. A scorched outpost in the middle of nowhere.
You know how close I am to leaving this place right now? How close?
Maybe that's why Val and Earl decided to leave town.
Oh, whoa, 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 whoa!
Hey, hold up. That's Edgar Deans.
They just picked the wrong day to do it.
Jeez.
You guys better get the hell out of here. There's a killer on the loose.
Could be doing it.
Is that a snake?
I'll give you boys $5 for this.
20.
That's how they get you. They're under the ground.
What the hell are those things? How could they eat a whole station wagon?
But where do they come from?
I vote for outer space. No way these are local boys.
You see, they're headed right for us.
No Richter scale can measure it.
They're coming!
No scientist can explain it.
Bert, they're under the ground!
You didn't get penetration even with the Alpha gun.
Run, run!
And no one knows what to call it.
Megaworms or suckers or suckoids.
Now this valley is just one long smorgasbord.
Now it's up to Val and Earl to save the world.
That's one big mother.
Who died and made you, Einstein?
And they know just what to do. flip for it.
Damn.
Kevin Bacon, Fred Ward, Tremors.
And this is a fun flick, man. I think this is one of the flick that I turned Matt on to watching because he had never seen. I told him he should watch Tremors, and I think Matt watched it and enjoyed it. It's campy as hell, it's stupid as hell, but it's also just one of those that it's just fun as hell too. It's hard to watch Tremors and not enjoy it, but it's also easy to watch it and pick apart how stupid it is. But that's what makes a great cult classic, I think, too. You know. I do believe it's on Netflix, possibly even HBO Max. I think it's streaming a couple of places, so it shouldn't be hard to watch along. Matt, don't go rent it because I'm sure it's out there to watch somewhere. as we all know, Matt.
I'm going to rent it even harder.
Matt's got a habit of doing that, renting movies. With everybody. What was it you rented a couple weeks ago that was on HBO Max? And then you're like, oh, shit.
Oh, man, it was a good Twister. Question because I've done it so many Twister. Times. Twister. Yep, it was Twister. Yep.
Okay. Well, it's definitely, according to IMDb, Tremors is on your Stars app also. I'm pretty sure it's on Netflix too as well. But anyway, should be hard to access Tremors. It's available out there somewhere. But that's cool, it. Man. And thank you all for listening. The RebelRadioPodcast.com for all your Rebel Radio needs. And we are now trekking on past 300 and on to some more fun movies. And it's going to be a good rest of the year. Got some good movies planned. And Halloween Horrors will be coming up soon, and that'll be fun. And the Compalooza in a few weeks, as we'll do some sort of show there of some kind. So it should be a good rest of the year. And thanks again, everybody, for getting us to 300. And this is episode 301 as we move forward. But until next week, stay safe, and thanks for listening. This has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And this is Long.
And again, as always, don't forget to just go there and do it.